Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Bridge the Atlantic. We are your host, music web designer Ross Barber, owner of Electric Kiwi, where we create awesome custom websites for bands, artists, and musicians.
And I'm award-winning independent singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist, Marcin Novelli.
This week, we welcome songwriter, producer, and vocalist of Cartel, Will Pugh, to the show. As the main songwriter in Cartel, Will has written records that have sold over 500,000 copies, and he has two top 40 hits to his name.
In addition to his work with Cartel, Will has also worked on records for Hydra Melody, Team, and The Delta as a producer and engineer. We're excited to hear about Will's career so far, what advice he'd give to fellow musicians, and what's coming up. Hi, Will.
Hello, how are you?
I am well, thank you. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Awesome, ready. Ross, are you ready to get things started very awkwardly?
As always.
Like to do in the show. Okay, yeah. Tell us three things about yourself, Will, that everyone should know.
Ooh, I am a avid lover of music of all kinds. I pretty much don't listen to anything that Cartel sounds like anymore. That's a little side note to that. Yeah, weird, but I'm a weird like Radiohead, like crazy music that makes your mom wince. That's the kind of stuff I actually like. The second thing, a very avid Georgia Bulldogs football fan, college football. Too passionate, in fact, scaring friends and family quite often during games, and a ridiculous golf nerd. I have played golf since I was 7. I'm 31, so 24 years of golf, and actually ranked number 3 in music in Golf Digest.
No kidding.
Humble brag, but I work real hard to get there, so, you know, I'll take it.
Awesome. So let's just jump right in, and we'll talk a little bit about Cartel first of all. So you toured pretty heavily with Cartel, playing with artists like Newfound Glory, LMFAO, and All Time Low. Mm-hmm. Do you have any sort of highlights or very memorable stories from any of the tours?
You know, Newfound Glory was probably the best thing that ever happened to our band, just because, I mean, when I was 15 and just starting to get into the underground scene, listened to a lot of hardcore, like straight edge hardcore, like the stuff most people never heard of unless you were into that scene. And then Newfound Glory came on, and, you know, all of a sudden all my friends were tough and, you know, like vegan straight edge, and we're going to go mosh the pit and stuff like that, or like into this, you know, all about girls pop punk thing. And I was down because I've always enjoyed pop, even as a, you know, little kid, mom listening to, you know, soft rock, top 40 hits sort of stuff. So Melody has always been my friend. I love it. So Newfound Glory was a big a surprise to the group of friends, and everybody was into it all of a sudden because Chad was in Shai Hulud, which is a hardcore band we all listened to. So it was like, oh, yeah, it's cool because Chad's a hardcore dude. And you know, that was when I was 15. We first toured with them, let's see, 06, so I was 22, so 7 years later. We played a college show with them in Boston, and it was the first time we'd ever met them. And obviously, you know, we knew everything that they had put out, like, you know, backwards and forwards, loved them, and been to a ton of their shows in Atlanta. And so we played with them in Boston, and I guess we had submitted for their tour that was going to be later that year. This was in April, and we toured with them that fall of 06. And we played a show with them and kind of had a weird shared dressing room, like in a backstage, like gym sort of thing. And, you know, there's not really any conversations that you can have that aren't overheard by the other bands. So I don't even remember what we were actually talking about, but somehow Ian, if you don't know him, is like probably the bass player of Newfound. Probably one of the most, like, at first you would think he's a giant asshole, but in reality he's one of the nicest dudes ever. But he's just, you know, real just kind of grump a little bit when you first are exposed to him. And he overheard us talking about something and then like butted in, jumped in like our little curtained off section, and we just started hanging out. And he apparently was always the one that was tough to win over with the band, like who should tour with Newfound. And apparently right after that show, he was like, I don't care who's on the tour, but make sure Cartel's on that tour. So, you know, from there, like Newfound Glory being like kind of that, you know, wet dream band to tour with when I was a teenager, to be able to actually do that. And we toured with them another time as well, in 2013, and played, you know, a ton of shows with them otherwise, but to be able to count them as friends and all that was probably the highlight of anything, you know, that I could say with Cartel. But, that's, yeah, I don't know, that and Kevin, we played in 07. We went to the Jingle, I think it's called the Jingle Bell Jam or Jingle Jam or something, Z100 in New York. I forget. All those Christmas shows have the same name, but in a different style. But it was huge. It was Madison Square Garden. We didn't actually play there. We played a separate venue that was with All American Rejects. It was like a kickoff show. But we actually introduced Evanescence on stage at Madison Square Garden, which
love
was
Evanescence.
Yeah, I mean, she's killer.
I just rediscovered them again. I was in love with them for years. I just got back into them. Just anyway, sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, she it's definitely some really good songwriting. Once Ben left, it was like, things kind of went down, but she's a ridiculous.
I was gonna say just her voice, right?
Yeah, it's stupid. She could sing the phone book, it'd be all right, but backstage, it was kind of a weird, like, definitely the most exposure to celebrity we ever had, and it was just us backstage. Like, we met Hulk Hogan there at one point, which was kind of cool for, like, you know, when you're a little kid and you're like, Hulkamania, sweet. But it's kind of too giant of a personality, both physically and figuratively, to really get to hang out with. But we were backstage at one of, the artist, you know, catering things, just, you know, having a drink, just watching the show on the TV. And Bon Jovi's standing over there. John Bon Jovi, not the band, but just the artist. He's standing over there with his, like, I don't know, 8-year-old kid, something like that. And Kevin, our drummer, is a fanatically huge, like, 80s rock fan. So, like, Bon Jovi and Journey, if they were in the room, like, you've never seen him fanboy like this ever. And he's standing there and he looks over and I was, you know, and we're all just like, well, you know, because you're desensitized to it at a certain point when you're just, you know, surrounded by, like, well, there's Rihanna, there's Bon Jovi, there's Hulk Hogan, there's you know, it's like, okay, you're just overwhelmed. And Kevin looks at me, he's like, dude, it's Bon Jovi. I was like, you gotta go say what's up, dude. I was like, he's right there, you're here, you got the same credentials, go say something. He's like, I have to, right? I'm like, yeah, you have to. So he goes over there and right in front of John's like 8-year-old kid, he's like, John, Kevin Sanders, just want to say you're a fucking badass. It's like right in front of his child. I'm like, Kevin, you could not drop the F-bomb. And Bon Jovi's just sitting there. He just kind of laughs. He's like, right on, dude. Like, appreciate that. And Kevin's like, awesome. And walks away. I was like, it was kind of like a blackout moment. He's like, was that cool? It's like, yeah, you were cool.
Yeah, sure, man. Yeah.
You're not nervous, but you did say fuck in front of an 8-year-old. So. There's that.
You know, give and take.
It's pretty funny.
So, Cartel's second album, you guys recorded it and produced it as like an MTV experiment called Band in a Bubble, which sounds a little strange to me, but can you tell us a bit about the experience and how that kind of differed from your usual writing and recording process?
So there was a band in Australia called Regurgitator that had done like an art installation. I forget where it was. I believe it was in Sydney. But the same sort of thing where they set up like a giant, you know, plexiglass sort of cube, in like a public space, a public square or something like that, and lived in there, recorded an album, did the whole thing. And it was kind of like what's his name? David Blaine, who would like live in a box in New York City. It was like that, but really big. So they kind of started it, and that was without any sort of commercial like sponsorship or anything. They just got permits and did it. And MTV borrowed that idea to do Band in a Bubble. Ours wasn't like a giant cube. It looked more like an igloo, actually. It was kind of weird. But essentially the idea was we live in this thing for 20 days. We go in and make our record, and people were able to come down onto, it was one of the piers, like next to Chelsea Piers in New York, if anybody's familiar with that. and they were able to come down the pier, like kind of sit there and watch it. I think there were some activities, like a volleyball net or something like that. It was just kind of, and it was sponsored by Dr. Pepper and Walmart and stuff like that, which was kind of, Dr. Pepper was the initial sponsor we heard of, but we kind of showed up the first day and like looked and were like, okay, KFC and Walmart too? Not necessarily our vibe, but when you sign that sort of contract, you kind of lose all control of that, fortunately. But anyway, yeah, you could kind of come down there and there was a giant like plexiglass in front of, I forget the dimensions, but it was pretty huge. You kind of see into the living space there, and there were some TVs out there that were kind of closed circuit where they had cameras set up in like kind of in the kitchen where you couldn't really see that well, and then back in the control room itself. So that essentially was the idea. There was live 24/7 webcams where you could kind of peek in, see what we were doing, even if it was nothing. And we sat there and made a record. And it was pretty crazy. We didn't go as stir crazy as you would think. I mean, we'd been in a bus, you know, at that point for 3 years almost consecutively. So the bubble, if you will, was a lot bigger than that. So not a really big deal for us.
Did you do it again?
Under different circumstances, yeah. I mean, yeah. If the same exact thing, hindsight, no. But not because of like the effects of it or anything like that, but more so the shenanigans that they tried to pull off when we were like, hey, listen, we told you this wasn't going to be real world. Like, there's no drama here. We've been friends since we were like 14, and Nick and Kevin have known each other since kindergarten. Like, this isn't going to be a drama filled.
They wanted to make like a reality show with drama, Big Brother thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and we told them, like, don't think that, think Jackass. Like, we're just a bunch of, we get together, you give us a little alcohol, and we're just having fun and making fun of each other in, you know, good-natured way, like, you know, just buddies. But they, you know, they were trying to stir some controversy, which I think we handled really well, because there was never any moments of controversy.
How did they try to pepper that in there?
Oh, God. The first thing they did was... there was one computer with the internet because we were supposed to be like chatting, like live chatting with fans and stuff. And then, you know, we obviously could check our email and, you know, talk with family or whatever if we had to. But I guess we watched the first episode that they put out, and we didn't necessarily know how it was going to go. We saw the first episode because they were coming out while we were in the bubble, and there were four of them. So we saw the first one, and we were like, wait a second, like, you guys are being assholes. Like, we didn't say that. That's not what we did. You're making it look like I told Kevin he was a dick, and that's not at all what happened. You know, like, and so we kind of expressed ourselves where obviously fans could hear it, and they didn't want to break that, what do they call it, like the fourth wall or something, what is in theater. Didn't want to break that, so they turned off the internet, which, you know, to dudes where there's no TV, there's nothing. The only contact with the outside world is a window and a laptop. We kind of went in a little nuts and like
that's moved, fucked up.
Yeah, moved all the webcams and stuff. We were kind of like, this is bullshit. Mm-hmm. That was the first thing, which I think was more just a, you know, they could have told us like, hey guys, don't watch the episodes because it will affect things, and we'd have been like, well, we get it, but don't do that. You know, don't edit it like that. That's stupid. Because our fans knew that we weren't like that band, because it wasn't our first exposure to, you know, fans seeing us outside of.
The question I have for you: how did it affect the recording of the record, though? Did you find that you were still able to make the record that you guys wanted to make, or did you find okay, good? Because I was wondering if you felt like it was too invasive and you guys weren't able to do exactly what you're doing. Because I'm a big fan of when I make a record, I document it, right? Mm-hmm. But the fear is always there, you know, is this going to change a little bit of how, you know, you perform, which it doesn't if you get used to the cameras being there and you forget they're there and you're just yourself. Yeah. No, that's good. That's good to hear.
Yeah, no, it was, I mean, if anything, we just kind of retreated into the process because, I mean, you know, we still had a record to make, and that's not just a, you know, easy thing to do. So it was very time consuming. If anything, we spent more time in the studio than we would have had we not been in that sort of environment. It was fine as far as artistically. I mean, I was just in there, you know, editing or like playing around with different things to do and like recording some vocals and all that. So like, I was pretty immersed in it. The other guys in the band might have a different story because kind of once they did their part, they just kind of hung out and did their own thing and, you know, tried to interact with the fans that were actually there, which I didn't do much of because I was in the control room pretty much 24/7.
Right, right. Speaking of being in the control room and doing a lot of things all at once, we recently read on Twitter that you are working on a solo album.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting. We'd love to hear about that.
Yeah, so it's been something I've been, like, probably, shit, it was 2015, 4 to 6, 7 years I've kind of been messing around
well,
with.
Well, it's 2019.
Oh, God.
Just kidding.
Time! I've been messing around with it pretty much since I got a mobile recording set up. Some of the things have kind of made its way into Cartel albums, like Waste. Solo song I did that turned into a Cartel song, and the song like the hidden track at the end of that album, the Get Through This, that was a solo thing as well. It was kind of never intended for Cartel, but that was the only outlet I had to get it, you know, to actually express those songs through. So it made its way in. Pretty much from there on, I've entertained the notion of doing it, but obviously, with being the principal songwriter in Cartel and having all those responsibilities, it kind of just kind of fell by the wayside. And I would do some songs here and there that were just, you know, in the process of writing for Cartel, some other things would come out that weren't Cartel at all.
And I was going to ask you, how do you differentiate it? Like, when, what moment did it happen where you're writing for Cartel for so many years, and then suddenly you're feeling like, well, you know, this is not going to Cartel when you're the principal songwriter in the band, anyways. So how do you find that differentiation?
It sounds way different. Like,
sounds,
I think,
the sound.
Yeah, it's like the solo stuff will not sound like Cartel at all. Like I think a lot of people, if they didn't know what my voice sounded like on recording, and even then, it, like, my voice doesn't sound the same in this stuff either. It's because it's not, you know, bombastic sort of rock. It's more, a little more subdued, moody. Or at least that's the stuff that I've been writing. It's not necessarily all the same genre. I'm still, like, actually trying to pin down, like, a direction, stylistically, because I've ridden the fence of a little bit electronic, super, like, almost grungy sort of rock, because that was, like, my early influences when I first started playing music or anything. It's gone so many different directions that I've had, like, periods of writing and really trying to find what I want to do outside of Cartel is tough, because I feel like I've got so many different things I could do, like a Postal Service type vibe,
right.
All the way to like Death Cab for Cutie sort of indie, real like melancholy sad bastard stuff, and then, you know, like, you know, Rage Against the Machine and Pearl Jam and all these other bands that I kind of grew up listening to. It's like that rock, you know, just unadulterated, that's also in me somewhere. So, and then, you know, more recently, like artists like Yanzi, you know, like Sigur Rós and Radiohead and things like that, that kind of explore the weird realms, but still have a little bit of a pop sensibility.
You know what?
It's just tough.
I'd love to hear Ross's opinion on this, but I think there's more flexibility. I mean, this just might be me, but I feel like there's more flexibility when it comes to a solo artist. Mm-hmm. I feel like a band, it's more important. And this is just me, maybe my own weird kind of obsessive compulsive head, that like a band can tends to benefit better with a sound, and also so that everyone kind of knows what they're going into as in the members themselves. But a solo artist, we expect there's going to be a lot of different angles, you know, different moods and feels. I mean, that's the way I approach my albums, and it's just kind of like the thing tying it together is your voice, and there's a thread tying something together there. Some of my favorite solo artists, their albums honestly range. Yeah, there's a girl named McMyers, and her album is totally, there's some grunge on there, right down to like some electronic stuff.
But again, Tegan and
Sarah, I think, are a great example. I'm not sure if you love Tegan and Sarah. Not only does each album have its own sound, but even within that album, they'll have like a pop punk song, but then
you can still tell it's them.
Yeah.
They're still...
So I wouldn't beat yourself up about it, man. Honestly, I think that, you know, I'm excited to hear it. So, you know, just do it. You know, and I think that it's all right. And I think once you record it too, you'll know. I think you'll know. You've done this enough times. You'll know what feels right. But there is a difference. You're on your own this time doing it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, for, you know, a lot of times, especially with Cartel being, you know, 10 something years along,
right?
You know, we've, we've gotten used to the process of like, all right, I'm going to write some chords and have like general idea of where a lead would be. And then my vocals are this, and then the drums are going to sound like this because that's the way Kevin plays, and then bring it into the band. And it's like, yep, they're doing pretty much 80% to 90% of what I thought they were going to do in the first place. So it all works out. Whereas now it's like, shit, I have to do everything, and I don't have any expectations of myself one way or the other. And it's like, well, I could do this or I could do that. And it's like some of that production mind starts to come in. We're like, well, God, I could do this so many different directions.
Well, were you producing this yourself?
That's kind of the plan as of now, but I bounced some things up back and forth with my manager about the potential of getting an outside ear production wise, whether
it's...
I was
going to say, because that could be the dangerous part. Not only as a solo artist, you have unlimited, you know, areas you can go through, but producing yourself too is like, if you're, since you're a producer already, you know there's a million and one ways you can go with this song. You end up with 20 versions of the same song.
Yeah, know? Exactly. It's almost like I need to go retreat myself somewhere away from Pro Tools and like write all the songs. And then once I have some sort of clear identity, even if that identity is multifaceted, like you said, where it's like, well, I'm going to release 5 songs of an electronic project, 5 songs of a super grunge, whatever thing, you know,
right, just mix
whatever
it is.
But I think that's the initial thing. You know, the hardest thing to do is always the first thing. And it's, you know, because I look at different bands and like artists that I'm like, all right, you know, these bands have progressed and really honed their sound, where it's still that band after all these years. I mean, I think like Radiohead, obviously, where they started and where they are now are polar opposites almost, but the voice still maintained the same. Coldplay is another, like early Coldplay stuff is my jam.
Yeah,
where they, I mean, they had like, I mean, there was nothing more than just the band there, and now it's like, you know, indistinguishable from.
It's almost like the music grew as their popularity grew, because the music was really small. I sort of cut you off there, but the music was really small almost. If that,
no,
you know,
totally.
The music's big now.
Yeah, I look at bands like that, and I'm like, well, I could do something like that too, and like. I feel like overall the main consistent theme is I want it to feel like there's certain records that just make me like I can listen to them right now and just feel so much. It's not just like one specific thing, and that's sort of the challenge, because I feel like some of the music I've written, some of it has achieved that. But it's, you know, it's hard because it's obviously subjective because it's your music. But I think part of the hang up is that, you know, some of those things like the Yancey record specifically, like when I listen to that, I'm just like, so not overwhelmed, but overwhelmed, but in a good way, just like, God, this is such like sensory, like, blitzkrieg, you know, you're just like, oh my God, there's so many different things, and I can feel it and I can hear it. And then this, I don't even know what he's saying at some points because he's speaking Icelandic, and then, but I still feel whatever he's trying to convey. And that seems like more of a challenge for me, where I come in from a world of like, all right, here's the verse and here's the chorus and here's the bridge and here's the, you know, like that's a little easier, even though he's still doing those same sort of things. It's like all over the place. It's like, well, I'm going to have a, you know, a harmonium here, and then I'm going to have a flute solo, and then, and then I'm going to have, you know, some strings come in the bridge that don't appear ever again. You're just like, you know, you're not used to thinking that way because you've been in a band, and it's like, well, there's guitars and bass and drums and vocals and cool. Whereas now it's like literally anything you could imagine you can put on this song. It's like, well, the palette's too big to like really synthesize without some sort of angle, you know.
It's exciting and terrifying.
Exactly. Yeah. You're just like, well, I've got I got 3,000 different patches with, you know, 2 or 3 variations each. So I'm looking between 6,000 and 9,000 different sounds that I could use.
Well, at least it's not 10,000.
Yeah, it's not 10,000.
Now, if you hit 10,000, man, I'd be like, okay, all right, dial it back.
Yeah. It's like, no, and it's all really splitting hairs at one point. But I think, you know, my main directive now is when I have some time, which it seems like I'm going to in the next little bit, and obviously with there's always going to be break in production schedules that I have normally filled with, you know, co-writing for, you know, a variety of different styles. But I think I'll be able to like actually you know, carve out some time for myself and really just focus on that, because I really haven't done it in a long time, like not since the last Cartel record. So it's, I think, I mean, and this is kind of a sad thing, like I think about it, I'm surprised almost, but I've only written and finished one demo since Collider came out, because I've been working otherwise.
It's okay though, man, it happens.
Oh yeah,
because then when you go back to it, you're just gonna, it's just gonna pour out of you, and you have to live, you know. That's okay, you know, you have to live between albums.
Yeah,
you know, you do. You need to, you know, you have a kid on the way.
Yes, I do.
That's gonna help you just write a whole new.
That's gonna, yeah, it's gonna be a whole new record, I think.
You better get this record out soon, man, because you're gonna have a whole slew of a whole other angle of songs you're gonna go to. You're gonna end up with 100 songs in front of you and just be like, ah, quadruple album.
I think, you know, honestly, thinking of that and knowing that that's obviously gonna be a life changing thing, even more so than it already is, but. You know, I think the trend nowadays for artists that aren't Adele is EPs, because you're not like necessarily committed to like, here's 12 songs that are supposed to blow your mind. It's like, I can give you 5 songs of one thing, especially if you're going with different genres or a little bit different sounds. Like, you can get those out quicker. Like, I could record an EP in a couple weeks if it were finished, if not quicker, or finished writing, I mean. And just churn out 4 of those a year, all different sounds. It like kind of appeases the artistic endeavors of like, well, I want to write a record like this, and I want to write a record like this. You can just kind of do it all and throw it under, you know, one project name, and then, or just have multiple projects. Be like, well, I'm
absolutely
doing this record.
Why not?
This one, like Ryan
why
Adams,
not?
You know?
Yeah,
why he's not? Moving around.
Awesome.
Who knows?
Well, get on that, man. We are both really excited to hear that. Are you ready for 20 questions?
I am ready.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Meat or veggies?
Meat.
I'm that straight edge vegan you were talking about earlier in the episode. I'm just kidding.
I love veggies, but it's like, oh man, like, I don't know. Yeah, more so fish. Like, I can't get away with sushi, even though I know they're like feel more than anything else. I'm not trying to jump in that. Into that argument, but
it's okay. I'm just teasing.
It's at least healthier. I'm more for like the healthier thing, and obviously,
yeah, it's good for
I'm
you.
Really just writing myself into a corner here. Yeah,
you're lucky I like you. TV or Netflix?
Netflix.
Twitter or Facebook?
Twitter.
Yoga or yogurt?
Yoga.
Nice.
Friends or Seinfeld?
What happened to your voice there? I was just like, Friends.
I was trying something new. I was trying that, you know.
Just going huskier, like, do I sound sexy?
Do I sound awesome now?
All right, so what was that 90s question again?
It was Friends or Seinfeld, and you love both of them, Marcio, so shut up.
No, actually, not. I like Seinfeld. Love Seinfeld.
Yeah, I actually just watched all of Seinfeld, from start to finish with Hulu, just putting it on this summer.
Amazing.
It's amazing that show started at, what, like, 92?
Was it 89.
89, yes.
Yeah. Same year as The Simpsons, man.
That's even crazy. Better. That's crazy. Yeah. But it's crazy how, how many modern social things we have that developed from Seinfeld, mm-hmm. and then how it still carries. Like, it's still good, even with, you know, they didn't have cell phones or any of that stuff, like, during the time. It's like, okay, this is still relevant. The comedy is genius. So,
yeah,
I love Friends, but Seinfeld is like,
producing or performing?
Producing.
Paramore or Fall Out Boy?
Paramore.
Analog or digital?
Analog.
Oh, I'm surprised by that.
Canada or Scotland?
Oh, fuck you guys. I'll say Scotland because I haven't been there as much in the mystique.
Everyone says that.
I do like Canada.
Everyone says that.
Vancouver and Toronto, I am Montreal. All three of those are pretty awesome. In between, it's not so good.
It's okay. Most of everyone that wants to see you live will go to one of those three cities anyway.
Yeah. You know? Great so, people in Canada, but there's not really shit.
Yeah, we're all right. You know? We're all right. No. Football or golf? And I think we know the answer is...
Ooh. Playing or spectating?
One of each.
Playing golf, spectating football.
Yeah, golf's pretty boring to watch.
Yeah, unless even for me, and I know exactly what's happening. Unless it's Tiger Woods about to win a major, which hasn't happened.
Yeah. I've watched golf. You know what? Actually, I say boring, but if you want to relax, it's actually a great thing to put on. If you want to just relax.
Oh, yeah.
But have something on golf.
Take a nap.
Yeah. And wake up and nothing's really happened.
Yeah. The British Open is the best because you have the British announcers early. If you watch early, they used to, the earlier coverage. Now it's like ABC. So those were always great because they're just like, oh, it's a marvelous shot there. You know, tracking towards the pin. Oh, just brilliant. You know, like they have such a different, and my accent is terrible, but like,
it's actually all right. Yeah, I was going to say it's much better.
Shut
than
up, Russ.
I like that because it's just like, oh, that's different. You know, it's a different way of putting it. It's great.
So education or experience?
I think experience is education.
Oh.
So I'll say experience.
He gone and flipped that.
He did.
Sorry to get all, you know, existential on.
Oh, no, don't. We love that on this show. We love it. Brand New or Taking Back Sunday?
Ooh.
And you guys were, it's weird to ask you that because you were kind of part of that whole scene and along with those guys. But Without ruining any friendships you may have had, by the way.
That's tough. It varies by record. I would say overall, probably Taking Back Sunday, but I think Brand New has been more influential than Taking Back Sunday.
Elaine or George?
Ooh, George, yeah.
I like George too. I was expecting to hate George before I watched Seinfeld. And I love George. Yeah. He's totally my favorite. Yeah.
Michael Jackson or Michael Bolton?
Oh, come on. MJ. Although Michael Bolton is one of your commercials.
Yeah, exactly.
It's awesome. Celine Dion or Marilyn Manson?
Man, that's tough. I like Manson because he just didn't care. He just wanted to make people feel something in one way or the other. I think that's kind of badass.
Agreed. Ricky Gervais or Ricky Martin?
No, Gervais. Come on.
Nice. Very nice.
Whale or kale?
Kale.
Nice. You know what? It makes up for the meat comment earlier.
Oh, yeah.
It makes up for it. Bette Midler or the Riddler?
Bette Midler. She's amazing.
And the final question, Will, and before you answer this, remember, I'm also a singer-songwriter. Who knows what the future holds? You're a producer. I'm looking to do another album. I'm looking to work with a few other producers. You never know what's going to happen down the road, Will. Saying, Russ, great dude, not a singer-songwriter. So. Go on, and that question is?
It's Ross or Marcio.
Just saying.
Oh,
we're assholes.
Dude, that's a rough question. Everybody has to answer that question.
Oh, everyone has to. Everyone has to.
Some people curse us. Some people tell us. Somebody. I think we have someone.
One person did just tell us to fuck off. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone just said fuck, and they refused to answer. They just said fuck off, and we laughed hysterically.
I'm gonna.
You have to answer.
I'm gonna give you a off the wall answer. So I've been listening to a lot of like metaphysical, psychedelic sort of podcasts.
Sure.
And the last one I listened to was mostly about Aleister Crowley, or Crowley, excuse me. Apparently that's the way you pronounce it. he had the whole left hand path or left full path or whatever. So because Marcio is on my left on the screen, I gotta go with him.
I won. You know, shut up, Ross. Yeah. I don't care how I won that one.
It's one of it's
I
you
won
know.
It. What's it's that, one of Will? Marcio's. Sorry. What was that?
It's only because that's the way it is on the screen. I was like, well,
now you're killing me. Now you're like, it's only because that's.
I know, Marcio.
You know what? Isn't most of life just like showing up and being there? Though, isn't that like half? You know, just being in the right place at the right time. And right now, I am in the right place at the right time, so I'll take it. Well, this has been great, man. You are a great dude, and could you let everyone know where they can find you online?
Not that
it's hard, but...
Yeah, and I'm on Twitter. It's Will Pug, although that's not how you pronounce my name. Long story short, a bass player used to call me Billy Pug, and I was like, ha-ha, and I almost made my Twitter name Billy Pug, which had been worse than people have called me Billy. But it's Will Q is how you say my name, but Will Pug, without the H at the end, is the Twitter and the Instagram.
And your website is Will Pugh Music. That's P-U-G-H music, right?
Correct.
And you are not on Facebook, but Cartel is on Facebook. Simply / Cartel, C-A-R-T-E-L, and that's pretty straightforward.
That is it.
Awesome. And I'm working on my next solo album, and you can hear my music at marcianovelli.com. That's marcianovelli.com. I've also recently released my award-winning documentary, Walking Proof, which chronicles the making of my debut solo album, and you can watch it for free at marcianovelli.com/walkingproof. Make sure to follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Spotify, which are all /marcianovelli.
I'm working on websites for various artists at the moment, and you can check out my work and my blog at electrickiwi.co.uk. You'll find me on Twitter and Instagram as Electric Kiwi, and on Facebook, Electric Kiwi Design.
This episode was brought to you by Chris Keaton Presents. Find out more about what Chris does and how he can help you at chriskeaton.com.
And if you'd like to sponsor the show, visit patreon.com/bridgetheatlantic.
Okay, well, you have to come back sometime in the future, man. When your solo album's done, we'd love to have you back.
I would love that. That'd be fun. This was a lot of fun.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.